Hiya, my name is Lauren Layfield, and this is Your Next Podcast, the podcast which creates a brilliant list of shows for you to try, adding a new one each and every week. I really like the idea of this podcast this week. It's called The Story, and it's from The Times and The Sunday Times. It's a daily show, and it basically looks at one story at a time, but in real detail. And it's hosted by Manveen Rana and Luke Jones. Now, sometimes the episodes cover like really newsy stories tied to the headlines, and then sometimes they're more issue-based, and this is the case with this episode today, which is all about open marriage.
From The Times and The Sunday Times, this is The Story, and I'm Jane Mulkerins.
If you were given the chance at non-monogamy in paradise, what would you do?
From the new US reality TV show Couple to Thruple, to Zendaya's film Challengers, to a slew of best-selling books, open relationships are having a moment.
Man, I keep having these uncontrollable boners.
Can you say that?
Yes, I can.
Can we get some lube, lube, lube?
Use your mouth.
That is an order.
But what's behind this recent rise? What is the history of loving more than one person at once? And can monogamous couples learn anything from non-monogamous ones? The story today, the rise of open relationships.
My name is Molly Roden Winter, and I am the author of More, a memoir of open marriage. The book tells the story of the first 10 years of opening my marriage, which means I included all of the messy parts as much as the joyful discoveries.
Molly and I met 5 years ago in the US when I was also living in New York. At the time, I was writing a book about open relationships too, and I asked her to be in it, but she was already writing hers, More. As she says, it's a tell-all memoir that includes even the trickier stuff, such as the moment her 13-year-old son first asked her about her relationship status.
I had just landed at the Houston airport. I was traveling for work, and all of a sudden a flurry of texts descended onto my phone when I went out of airplane mode. And my son was asking, Mom, call me. I need to ask you something. And because I hadn't responded right away, he blurted out his question in the text, are you and Dad in an open marriage? So I had a moment to consider how I was going to respond when I called him, but I really wasn't prepared to answer that question. So it felt like a real crisis of identity, trying to reconcile myself as a mother and myself as a sexual being. He thought his father, my husband Stuart, was cheating on me. He had seen my husband's dating profile on a laptop that he wasn't supposed to be using. And, you know, it said in the profile that we were in an open marriage, so he just wanted confirmation that that was the case. I, of course, did not realize that. So in my effort to soothe his fears about what open marriage might mean, I said, oh, you know what, honey, you don't have to worry. Dad tells me everything and I tell him everything. And he responded with, what? You do it too?
Molly, before we get further into the discussion, I want to unpack this term because you just said open marriage. Other people say polyamory, non-monogamy, ethical non-monogamy. What do you call your marriage and what does that mean to you?
When we first opened the marriage, it was 2008. I didn't have any of this language. I had never heard the term ethical non-monogamy. And what I was trying very actively to not do was to fall in love with anybody else. So polyamory was the farthest thing from my mind. Polyamory means that you love many. It comes from a Greek and Latin root, just stuffed together. But it was not a word I would have ever used to describe myself. eventually we did start saying ethical non-monogamy, which just means you are not having sex with only your husband, even though, you know, monogamy means you're only married to one person. So I'm still married to one person. Sometimes people confuse it with polygamy. Polygamy is married to being married to more than one person, and especially for men to have many wives. That's not what's happening. I have one husband and many other sexual relationships.
So a lot of the language is probably very new to people. It was new to you when you started out. But having multiple partners is not a new idea. It's not a new practice. What Right. does feel new and different to you about this particular form of open marriage, non-monogamy, ethical non-monogamy?
Well, I think, you know, there are scholars who have looked into the historical roots of polyamory, and it dates back thousands of years. But monogamy as a practice, especially in the West, has been the standard for as long as we study families. And what's new is that it is entering the mainstream for heterosexual couples. In the last 50 years, I think it's been much more common and accepted in queer culture, largely because, in my belief, there has to be so much negotiation from the get-go in a same-sex partnership or when one person's non-binary. You can't just fall into these default roles of husband and wife.
That brings us very neatly to my next question, which is your starting point, you know, the point where you did bust these things open. So you were initially in a monogamous marriage with your husband. What was your life like?
I mean, it was a good life. And it's always like one of those things where it's hard to critique. I was home with my two children, the 3-year-old and a 6-year-old. I had taken off 1 year, I was what I thought, from teaching. But I was really overwhelmed by motherhood in particular and the lack of adult contact that goes with it. My husband worked, he started his own company. He writes music for film and TV, and often, you know, as being in New York, calls with LA would have to happen at maybe end at 9 p.m. and then he would need to do work for the client after that. And it was, you know, it was all very regular stuff for my set in Park Slope, you know, in Brooklyn. And I was dying inside.
Wow. Okay. So how did you go from this very regular point to opening it up?
I was at the end of my rope. My husband came home late and I just stormed out. I forgot to even bring my phone. I didn't bring my wallet. I just brought my keys to let myself back in. I thought I was just going for a walk. And I ended up running into someone that I used to teach with. And she dragged me to a bar and I met somebody who was a younger single man who was flirting with me. And it was enlivening. Suddenly, I went from this bedraggled, overwhelmed mom to a woman who apparently was kind of sexy, and it felt amazing. And so that's where it began.
And tell me how it went that night. Did you, after meeting this younger man who obviously, you know, turned your light back on in a way, did you set anything up with him? Did
Right.
you make any plans?
We exchanged numbers. And then when I got home, my husband had seen a text from him on my phone, which I had left behind. And so the conversation began there. Although the conversation had actually begun about 10 years prior, my husband is 5 years older than I am. He had had a lot more dating and sex experience before we got married. I had had one college boyfriend, couple one-night stands, basically. And my husband had said before we got engaged, you know, there's no way you're going to be okay with only sleeping with me for the rest of your life. I want you to tell me if you ever want to sleep with someone. And the other part of it was it turned him on. So we had done a little bit of experimentation before we got married. We had gone to a sex club a couple times in the city. We had had one threesome or maybe a couple with an ex-girlfriend of his. But I never thought that I was actually going to want to take him up on it. I didn't think I liked any of that. But here was a new scenario. It wasn't a sex club. It wasn't anonymous. It was somebody I had clicked with. It felt very dangerous. I thought, I don't want to blow up my marriage. I don't want to blow up my life. But my husband was there saying, it's okay, go ahead. And that's where it really began.
So let's go back to that night, just in a little bit more detail. You meet this man at the bar, you go home, you get a text, or your husband reads a text. What happens next?
So it took me a while to actually sleep with him. So I call him Matt, but he was also had a girlfriend he was cheating on. I wanted him to think I was cheating on my husband because that seemed normal. My husband knowing about it and even encouraging it felt deviant. And I thought it would flip him out. So it took me a while and I didn't know what I was doing and I kind of didn't want to know. But it was a really incredible kind of night. We went out for drinks. We had this thing where, you know, our legs would touch and we wouldn't like move them away, but we were kind of pretending like we weren't about to do what we were about to do. Like we were just catching up as friends. And then he invited me back to his apartment. His girlfriend was out of town. And I went, but we kissed and I flipped out and I thought, I don't think I can't do this. I thought this was, again, danger, danger. So I left, but I texted Stuart, my husband, and I told him what had happened. And I said, should I go back? I was walking home really slowly. And he wrote back and said, go for it. And so I turned on my heel and went right back and slept with him.
So that relationship lasted for 4 years. But tell me how it ended with this guy that you've called Matt in the book.
I was lying to him, telling him that I was cheating on my husband. And it was a pretty volatile moment. I won't give any spoilers except to say he found out and he did kind of freak out. And that created a rift. But I will add, later, we did reestablish a friendship and I am still in touch with him.
So that's your open marriage starter. Tell me where your polyamorous journey, I guess, went from there.
It was hard. It really hurt to lose that relationship with Matt. The other thing that had happened along the way is that Stuart had started to date other people, which I always knew was a possibility. I was not quite prepared for how hard that would be for me. And I went through a period of dating a lot. Dating is a really generous word for it. I was having sex all over the place.
Quite literally sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Quite literally.
If I'm not sensationalizing this too much, there are some bar toilets. There are some hotel rooms. There are some workspaces.
Yeah. And these are the parts of the story that were really hard for me to write about because I did feel a lot of shame. At the same time, it was funny, but I felt a lot of shame. It's interesting. Even talking to you right now, I get a little pit in my stomach. And therapy was very helpful to me during that time because there was something compelling me to do things that felt like bad girl kind of stuff. I was always a very good girl. So I was figuring myself out. And so that's where therapy was really helpful for me in trying to parse out what are the pieces of this adventure that I want to retain and what are the pieces that are not serving me.
So Molly, you know, this is your unique experience and we'll come back to where you're at with all of that now. But let's put it in context for people. Open relationships definitely seem to be having a moment, as do books about open marriages. What are the current attitudes to it?
I think the fact that we've got non-monogamous in the drop-down menu of certain dating apps, that was a game changer for me.
Actually, the dating app statistics are really useful actually on this, because Field, which is obviously known as the sort of dating app for, you know, less traditional forms of relationships and sex. And in 2024, mm-hmm. earlier this year, Field reported that it's seen a 500% increase in users, including ethically non-monogamous and polyamorous in their profiles. But even the stats from, you know, the UK in general, from surveys that aren't to do with dating apps are huge. There was a survey in 2023 from YouGov in the UK saying 12% of adults said they've either had or are open to a polyamorous relationship, which is definitely significant, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there was some stat in the States or something. More people have been in polyamorous relationships than have gotten master's degrees or something.
I love that stat.
Yeah. Right. You can get a master's in life by doing this. Master's in relationships.
Yeah. So this kind of mainstreaming of polyamory and open marriage in this way, would you say that it's a shift towards equality and that it's very different from the only sort of multiple partner arrangement that people might have known in the past, which was probably polygamy, multiple spouses, but men with multiple wives? So this is it arguably a much more right. feminist practice?
I believe so. I mean, there were a lot of moments in the early days where I was really questioning my right to do this and my own desires. I'm a Gen Xer, and spoiler alert, my parents also had an open marriage, but they never told me. There was a lot of shame around it. And I think for my mother, that shame came from, how can I want anything that is not within the four walls of my home? And I wrestled with that too. And I think what we're facing now is women looking at the role that they've been put in and starting to understand that you can live out loud outside of that role. So my hope is that, yes, it is moving towards equity and a feminism in which women can be whatever they want to be.
My name is Dr. Elizabeth Sheff. Most people call me Dr. Eli. I'm a sociologist, relationship coach, author, educator, and consultant.
So Dr. Eli, one of your specialities is polyamory and open relationships. And you said that that practice of loving more than one person probably goes back to prehistoric times. But I wanted to ask a bit more about the roots of modern polyamory, this idea that we've got now about loving many. You've said before that it comes in three distinct waves. Can you talk us through that?
So the first wave of polyamory started in the late 1800s, mid to late, with anarchists and utopianists looking for a new way for people to interact and hopefully finding kind of more freedom and more authenticity. The second wave started in the 1960s and into the 70s, and that was the free love wave of exploring the sexual revolution and challenging conventional notions of sexuality and gender and propriety. And the third wave started, I would say, near the end of the 1990s and really gained steam in the 2000s with the introduction of not only internet communications, but especially social media, where people could find each other, realize they're not the only person who wants multiple partners, find partners and advice and support and community. And that's the wave that we're in now. The third wave is going really strong.
So in all of that, was there a sort of key turning point in society, maybe when it was brought into sharper focus or something that really kicked it off?
Interest in consensual non-monogamy really rose significantly after World War II. During World War II, we had a significant rise in same-sex interaction. While the men were away at war, women were working and had more money and more freedom than they'd ever had before, and started this kind of nascent kernel of lesbian community. And the men, while they're away at war, start this nascent kernel of gay male community. And they get home in droves then after the war. And a lot of these men who grew up in small towns or rural areas of the United States had tasted freedom, freedom from surveillance, freedom from their family's oversight, freedom from people knowing what they were doing and trying to push them to marry the girl next door. So maybe about 10 years after World War II ended, we started to see the beginnings of that sexual revolution. We just saw increasing diversity, people starting to create their own social communities and networks based around a sexual identity. We had, for the first time ever, gay community starting to form in the 1960s. And we had the first kind of gay activism. Similarly, we started to see groups of people coming together with a shared identity around having an open relationship or a group marriage or being swingers. That's pretty unusual in human history to have a group of people identify themselves with a collective sexual identity. Usually people have, across human history, identified themselves with collective ethnic or religious or national or occupational identities.
Molly, in summary, you've been on a hell of a journey with your marriage and your other relationships for the last 15 years. You've had good ones, bad ones, awful ones, colourful ones, lurid ones. Some people listening to this will think, okay, great, I think I might want to give it a try. Some people will think, hell no, that just sounds absolutely terrifying. For those people who still think monogamy is maybe for them and that your experience, while they want to listen to it, maybe don't want to try it, did you learn anything that would be useful for the monogamous people?
When you are monogamous, you still get to be an individual. That's number one. And I think we have this myth out there of merging with another person, or at least of this other person fulfilling all of our needs. And I feel like we fear so much. We fear what it means if our partner wants something that we don't or can't or won't give them. And it can be freeing for both. Like, I don't like going to Costco. My husband and his girlfriend love going to Costco. This is a win for everyone because I get the Costco little mini rice packs that I love, and I never have to set foot in a big box store. That's just one example, but it's like, it doesn't have to be about sex. It can be about so much more than that.
It doesn't have to be about sex. It can be about supermarket shopping. And as we were saying, open relationships are increasingly coming to the fore, whether that's through cultural products, whether that's just through conversations, whether that's dating apps. Do you think this is part of a greater shift where other aspects of society are kind of shifting and becoming more fluid too?
Absolutely. You know, I think there is a connection between all of this change and COVID. It made people question a lot of things. My oldest, for example, didn't go to college. And so we're questioning all these things we've been fed is like, oh no, you got to go to the office 5 days a week and you got to go to college and you got to do this, you got to do that. Maybe you don't. There is a statistic in the US that 30% of Gen Z identify as queer. And that might mean queer in terms of sexuality, in terms of gender. But I think what that is saying in part is it's a rejection of these models of this is what it means to be a man. This is what it means to be a woman. This is what it means to be heterosexual. And I think along those same lines, maybe I don't have to settle if I want some other relationships outside of my main partnership, or maybe I don't even want, you know, one partner as a primary. There are a lot of people exploring what's called solo poly, where you don't get married and you still can have love. I think we've thought of being single as meaning, oh, then you'll never have any love. What if being single meant you can love a lot of people? There's a lot shaken up these days.
And finally, Molly, so this journey started about 15 years ago. What's happening now with you and your husband, Stuart? What's going on with your marriage and your other relationships now?
We're both dating other people. My husband is still dating the woman that he was dating at the end of More, my book. So that's 9 years and counting now. I have two relationships. One of them has been going for 3.5 years and one for 2 years. And we're both really happy. We also make, you know, Saturday nights consistently our date nights. We still happily share a bed. I think we're having the best sex we've ever had, and we're in our 50s, so that's pretty good. So I feel like things are pretty remarkably good. I feel kind of obscenely happy.
That was Molly Winter, the author of More, a memoir of open marriage, and Dr. Elizabeth Sheff, sociologist and author. Today's producer was Olivia Case. The executive producer was Kate Ford, and sound design was by Tom Birchall. See you again soon.
I think the story is really great. It's a real contender for one of your daily podcast listening slots. Other recent episodes have looked at why are so many young people getting cancer, the rise of the right in France, and tracing the origin story of Taylor Swift. So I'm definitely going to go and check those out. To find the story from The Times and The Sunday Times, search for it wherever you listen to podcasts. Once you've tapped follow for that on Amazon, Apple, or Spotify, don't forget to do the same for this show too, so you can find your next podcast. All my recommendations from the whole series will also be on Podcast Rex at www.podcastrex.com. That's www.podcastrex.com.